welcome everyone to our third seminar in the PPS Success Mentor Teleclass series. If this is your first seminar, let me welcome you and introduce myself. My name is James Phelps, and in addition to being your host for tonight's call and future calls, I'm also the PPS Success Educational Coordinator. Tonight, we're very lucky to have with us J.P. Sears, who will be offering us his insights on holistic emotional healing. And this is no small offering. We're getting a little bit of an echo effect. Okay, things go away. Anyway, as I was saying, this is no small offering because in addition to being Czech Level 4 Holistic Lifestyle Coach and Czech Institute faculty member, JP is a specialist in holistic emotional healing and our resident PPS Success Mentor in that very area. And JP runs his practice in holistic emotional healing and lifestyle coaching out of the Czech Institute in Vista, California, and has recently begun offering his own course entitled, I believe, The Essentials of Holistic Emotional Healing. And to learn more about JP and the services he offers, I invite you to visit his mentoring page located in the PPS mentoring section of our website at ppssuccess.com. I know JP back from my days at the Czech Institute, and I can vouch for the fact that this is someone that takes a truly holistic approach to life and has a wonderfully gentle, clear, and effective way of showing his clients how to do the same. He is both calm and wise beyond his years, but underneath that calm exterior is a bit of a devilish sense of humor, and I have no doubt that we'll see some of that tonight. So put all of that together, and I think you've got a pretty special person in JP and an amazing coach to boot. Now, before we begin, I'll let everybody know that we do record these calls. So if you happen to be in a high traffic area or you're on a cell phone that might pick up some echo effects, I recommend that you mute your line until you have a question by pressing *6. And then if you want to join in the conversation, you can unmute your phone at any time by pressing any button on your phone pad. So with those details out of the way, welcome, JP. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks for a pretty darn generous introduction, James. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome, and I only speak the truth.
Well, I'll take that. I would also say thank you for everyone who's on the line for joining our little powwow session tonight. And the purpose of the call, as I know it in this moment, is for you and I to explore concepts in what we're calling holistic emotional healing. For me, it's a pretty big topic, and given our hour on the phone, we're going to slice off a few concepts from the big pie, and we're going to go with that. I would say what we'll talk about, there are concepts and strategies that are very meaningful in my life. They're very meaningful in the work I do with clients every day. I'm very lucky to have clients show up and say, well, JP, there's some things going on in life, so let's see if we can sort it out. And we sit down and I get to learn about myself. Reflected in my clients. And so what I would hope you could walk away with tonight isn't advice on your own emotional healing or self-growth. It's my opinion that nobody can really give you good advice except the person in your own skin. What I would hope you walk away with is your version of how you hear this call, so that you can consider new possibilities, possibly consider old possibilities as well. And from there, you'll just walk away with the parts of this call that are right for you, and you'll leave the rest here. And with that said, I would also say to the question, well, gosh, why explore holistic emotional healing in that, you know, making more money or how to, you know, make yourself grow taller. All probably important concepts. But for me, emotional healing is a very near and dear concept to my heart. So why I'm motivated to explore the topic today is you know, we're all involved in this project called life. We're all blipped into this world with not too much say in the matter, and nobody really gives us a owner's manual on how to run this program called life. So there's those of us who run into some snags, encounter some pain and frustration. Then there's those of us who do the same, but we're just in denial of running into the pain or the frustration. And from my point of view, any time we're emotionally wounded, metaphorically speaking, we become less than whole. That's at least how it feels to a certain part of our being. And any time we're feeling less than whole, we continuously search for a way to make ourselves whole. And most of us spend many years and decades searching external of self to complete self. And usually it proves fruitless in the long term. You know, we'll be motivated to go out and make more money. If I can only make X amount of dollars, well, then I'll feel good. Or I'm motivated to go out and get into a better relationship or a better looking partner or increase my social status, get a new car or whatever it might be. And we can get some satisfaction in embracing concepts external of self. However, my experience suggests that it's always short-lived, much like I like to use the analogy of a heroin addict. They'll inject themselves up. However, it doesn't give them long-term satisfaction, so they have to scramble around to get their next high. So then we can ask the question, well, gosh, JP, if we can't complete ourselves with things external of ourselves, well, how do we do it? Well, for me, this whole concept of emotional healing is about embracing ourself, because I believe it's our internal environment that holds the key to wholeness, satisfaction of life, and peace of mind. And those of us who search around long enough, oftentimes the only place, the last place we can look is within. And for me, that's where it's at. So how do we embrace ourselves to complete ourselves? For me, that's what emotional healing is all about. And for those of us who choose to continue searching outside of ourselves, making more money or whatever it might be to try and feel whole, we're forever trapped in the gravity of codependence. Codependent with material possessions, codependent with other people. And what I call the process of growing up is actually figuring out how to become interdependent, where we can meet our emotional needs within and feel whole from within. So that's maybe a long spiel about why JP's on the phone motivated to talk about his version of holistic emotional healing. By the way, I would just say that any facilitator of emotional healing, any authentic facilitator, would come from a very wounded background. And I would actually love to sit on the phone and say, well, gosh, I'm here to tell you guys how to heal yourselves, because I've got it all figured out and I'm up here on a pedestal and off I go. For me, that's not the case. I've spent decades of my life in a lot of denial about the parts of me that have yet to be healed. And for me, the continual work on enriching the relationship I have with myself by healing the parts of me that are compromised that's a very important part of my life. Just know it's a pleasure to be a soldier on the battlefield with you, as a co-student of this class with you guys tonight. And a few of the little slivers of the pie that I'd like to discuss tonight. One, I'd like to throw out my definitions of what holistic emotional healing is. I'd also like to cover why our most significant emotional wounds are most often hidden, meaning that we can be severely compromised, carrying around massive levels of pain, and be so numb to it that we just don't know it. So I'd like to toss around some ideas about why that may be true. I'd also like to toss around the crazy concept of why being emotionally wounded and compromised as a human being is necessary and purposeful. And I know that's a little bit of a bold statement to throw out there, because you say, well, JT, you don't know about the crap that's happened to me in my life. So I'd like to leave you on a little bit of a cliffhanger, and we're going to revisit why, according to JP, it's essential that we go through the wounding. And then I'd also like to cover, how do we actually begin to heal ourselves? How do we recognize where we're compromised? And how can we begin the ritual of what I would call permanent healing? And then, for me, that's probably an agenda that's a little bit too tall for one evening. However, to that, I'd also like to add, at the end of the call, if there's anybody on the line who'd like to volunteer to have a mini session where we work on resolving an issue you have going on in your life, or something about your life that you feel stuck in that you'd like to change, I would invite you to speak up at the end of the call, and you have permission to be named or nameless, your call. And so if there's anybody that would like to do that, we'll give you a shout here in a few minutes. So with that agenda on the table, going into, what is holistic emotional healing? Well, for me, holistic emotional healing is just a fancy way of saying healing ourselves. For me, the term holistic implies that we're acknowledging the physical, the emotional, the mental, the spiritual, as well as the intuitive aspects of a person. Physical speaks for itself. Emotional, of course, is how we feel about life. Mental would be how we think about life. Spiritual would be, many definitions. I would just submit the definition of spiritual being a sense of belonging and a sense of wholeness, and the intuitive aspects of us. And, of course, our intuition is what can pierce through the illusions that our own human mind holds. So my version of holistic emotional healing that I subscribe to acknowledges all those components of a person, knowing that we can be compromised in any one of those areas, more likely all of those areas, at any given time. And with emotional healing, I would also say, if we're dealing with the concept of emotional healing, wouldn't that imply that we already have to be wounded or compromised or in pain? And you might say, JP, I've lived a pretty peachy life, so, I don't think this really applies to me. I don't have anything to heal. I actually get a lot of people say, I don't have any skeletons in my closet, so let's not go there. Well, from my little perch in life where I look out on the world, I like to say there's two types of people. There's those of us who are incredibly emotionally wounded, And then there's those of us who are in denial of being incredibly emotionally wounded. And for me, denial isn't necessarily a bad thing. There's parts of us that have to be in denial about various aspects of our life at any given time. We have full awareness of all components of our being, all perceptions of our human ego. It would actually be so darn overwhelming that we'd just be paralyzed. So I would just say that. I'd also like to say, well, gosh, what is an emotional wound? I've thrown that term around a couple times by this point. So for my definition of an emotional wound, what I would submit is, first of all, if you look at the word emotion, you break it down, it's E-motion, which stands for, as you may know, energy in motion. And that's what an emotion is. Of course, if you've got happiness, the emotion of happiness flowing through your body, this vibrational energy of happiness, it literally glides through your meridian system, chakras, body tissues, much like water flowing through a garden hose. So you're experiencing the emotion of happiness. If you've got anger flowing through your system, you've got the vibrational energy of anger flowing through your energy system. And at this point, I would just go out on a limb and say that there are no negative emotions. Some people would say, well, gosh, JP, anger or shame, those are negative emotions. Well, for me, those are very purposeful emotions. What would create an emotional wound and what would turn anger toxic and shame into poison is when those emotions become stuck in our bodies. So the motion of the emotion is literally on pause. So it's much like kinking your garden hose. The water simply doesn't flow through. And this would be for those of us sitting in a pool of denial, like parts of me are in this very moment. My garden hose is simply kinked. I'm not aware of some of the emotional compromises that I carry around. And just because the energy isn't flowing and we don't experience it, it doesn't mean it's not there. Much like if you're constipated and you may not have fecal matter flowing through your colon as you'd otherwise like, just because you don't know it's building up inside doesn't mean it's not hurting you. Of course, a toxic colon is very harmful to our health. And emotional healing is essentially a way of giving ourselves an emotional enema. So in this crazy world, we go through and we're actually looking for stuck energy in the body. So if I've got anger stuck in my energy system, that's just anger that hasn't been processed. So as I go about the healing of this wound of anger, well, gosh, I'm just looking to set the energy of the anger back in motion. If the energy of anger is back in motion, it can be processed and flow through the body and become effectively dissipated in its appropriate time. So those are maybe a lot of words to describe one version of what an emotional wound is. And I'll just reiterate, from my point of view, the painful emotions of life, anger, fear, shame, jealousy, grief, are just as purposeful as the joyful emotions. If we give ourselves permission to feel the painful emotions, that's what allows them to dissipate. When we freeze, tense our muscles, hold our breath to restrict the flow of energy, that's what auto-intoxicates the body with the emotion. I would also say that you'd say, well, gosh, I'm just not aware of this, so you know, where I'm stuck or blocked, maybe that's halfway true, but I haven't had much in the way of painful circumstances in my life. And there's some interesting evidence people suggest, sociologists and psychologists suggest that 90% of our beliefs about ourselves are formed by the age of 7. And I would venture to guess that it's our beliefs about ourselves, how we judge ourselves, that creates the judgment of self that creates emotional wounds. So that would mean that most of us have formed our compromises, most significant compromises, by the age of 7. And this absolutely does not just apply to those of us who had a quote-unquote traumatic childhood filled with physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. That's just one avenue. There's those of us who went through and had our wounds essentially in stealth mode. And you might say, well, gosh, my parents were, you know, they were great people, and I have a great relationship with my parents. So, you know, I don't know if that applies to me, JP. Well, that's possible. And I wouldn't want to discount whether or not you have a great relationship with your parents. What I would say is, as children, anytime there's an overwhelming emotion that we don't have the emotional faculties to deal with, which pretty much is most children, we just aren't born with a handbook of how to deal with tough stuff. So as children, anytime we had an overwhelming emotion for self-preservation, we simply had to go into denial about it, which would actually bring me to the suggestion of this, that we're all still children dressed up in adult suits. That's a term I learned from a great teacher, John McMullen, and I found it to be absolutely true. Most of us, from an emotional perspective, actually statistically 90% of the time, we're functioning emotionally below the age of 7, which is pretty interesting. So we're going to come back to, well, how our childhood experiences can actually compromise our present-day life. And actually, if I could add to that before we jump forward, talking about, well, as children getting emotionally wounded, it's not a story about saying, oh, our parents treated us well or they treated us like crap. What matters isn't how they treated us. What matters is how we perceived them treating us. There's many children who grew up in the same family, same parents, who have drastically different perceptions of how their parents treated them. And I would say from a higher purpose perspective, it's necessary for us to perceive life situations in a way that compromises us. And again, we'll get to why that's important. So we might come to the point of asking ourselves, well, how would our emotional compromises we incurred in our past actually show up present day? Well, a lot of the clients I work with, they'll show up saying, well, gosh, I've got this anger, or I feel frustrated, or gosh, I went through a breakup and I feel pain about it. Or I notice the same patterns in my relationships repeating themselves. You know, I'm in a relationship for 6 months and all of a sudden it goes sour and I can't stand my boyfriend, can't stand my girlfriend. Others would report depression, anxiety, apathy. And some people just come in saying, JP, I feel pretty dull about life. And for me, that's feeling dull or just in a fog. That's one of the ways we begin to wake up. because as we numb ourselves out to what's painful about our life, by default, we have to become numb and desensitized to the joy of life. So when we're strolling around saying, well, the flowers just don't seem as bright anymore, what that's a clue is, well, we're pretty darn numb. And that's a good time to go back and see where we're compromised, where we've learned to become desensitized in the name of self-preservation, and learn how to sensitize ourselves again so we can heal our wounds and feel the pleasures of life once again. So at this point, with your permission, I'd love to entertain the question, why are some of our most significant emotional wounds hidden or numbed out or just out of our awareness? Said another way, or in addition to that, there's always a story under our story. As an example, I've had clients who come in and say, you know, right now I just feel like I'm falling apart. My boyfriend cheated on me, and life just feels absolutely crappy right now. So the client comes in with a story, whereas the story serves as a symptom, and the real issue is actually so painful that they're numb to it. And as long as they dwell on their story of my boyfriend cheated on me and he's a bastard and I'm pretty cool, the actual issue will continue to be unaddressed. And sometimes the story under the story that we bring up is actually, well, gosh, is it possible that you've got so much shame about not being able to fulfill your boyfriend's emotional needs that he had to go out and find another woman? Could that be a possibility? And a lot of people actually don't even want to address that because it's too painful. As we're getting closer to the core issue, well, the fire just gets a little bit hotter. I would also suggest that if you've taken another class with me before, you, the Czech Holistic Lifestyle Coach, you may have heard me talk about in orphanages long ago how children who didn't get enough attention would actually die. And it wasn't the lack of attention that would actually kill the children and shut their physiology down. There's a lot of documentation about this. It was actually what the lack of attention represented, and what it represented was a shame of abandonment that was so overwhelming to the child. The young children certainly don't have the emotional faculties to deal with that, so of course they would actually die. And it's actually said, well, they do experiments. You throw a pig out of an airplane with a parachute on. Pig lands safely on the ground, but it's always dead, simply because the fear kills the pig. So that's one of the reasons why we had to become very, very numb to what was threatening to us as children, simply so we could preserve our life. And there being always a story under the story as an example of the subtle ways we become emotionally wounded, for those of us who, including myself, who would say, well, gosh, my parents were pretty great parents. They never beat me or anything like that. And we'd say, well, gosh, how did your parents treat you when you were a child? And you'd say, well, they treated me wonderful. And we'd say, well, okay. How did your parents treat each other? You might say, well, gosh, they actually, sometimes they would just fight like cats and dogs. And you say, well, could it be possible that you've got an unresolved wound about the shame about not being able to stop your parents from fighting and what all that means to you? So for me, investigating the stories under the story is where the true healing has potential to take root. And with that, I'd like to jump into the, just touch on the concept of intuition as it relates to holistic emotional healing. So given that I've put out the theory that there's always a story under the story, you say, well, how in the world would we actually get to the story under the story? For me, that's where Einstein says it best. Einstein has a quote. He says, the intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. Yet most of us have forgotten the gift, and we honor the servant. So the gift of the intuitive mind, that's what allows us to use our own intuition to pierce through our stories and find what's really compromised in ourselves. And for me, the reality of that is that using our intuition on ourselves, it's actually, there's no other person on earth who your intuition will be more blocked on as yourself. We can use our intuition and make great strides. However, I found working with my coaches and having clients allow me to coach them, that having an outside source of intuition is always, oftentimes very beneficial to finding our story under the story. And in just a few minutes, when I invite a volunteer, if anybody would like to go for it, with permission, I'll use my intuition to see if we can find some resolve on an issue. So with that, I'd like to chew on for a moment the concept of why wounding is necessary. And one of the concepts I'd like to launch off into first is it's the pain of life that gives rise to the strength of life. Unless we break ourselves down, we'll never get stronger. And those of us who know about how muscle building works, you know, if you want bigger biceps, you actually have to wound your biceps. Going out and lifting weights literally breaks your cells down. And it's not until the cells are broken down that they'll rebuild, and they'll actually rebuild stronger than what they were before the wound of the workout, actually. And if you ever break a bone, the bone grows back stronger than what it was before the break. So to perpetuate ourselves in our own self-growth, it's absolutely important that we embrace where we've been wounded in our past. And now this isn't really an indictment that we need to go out and fill ourselves up with pain. I would say most of us are plenty filled with pain. We don't need to be martyrs and self-inflict it. We've already done that. And the law of polarity, that's an important concept with regard to why emotional wounding is necessary. We all know we can't experience hot if we've never experienced cold, and we can't experience up if we have no down. So the same comes to it with emotions. Shame being the lowest of all emotions. In fact, research done by Dr. David Hawkins, it calibrates the vibrational energy of shame to be the lowest frequency of all emotions. It's just an absolute feeling of being a mistake in this world. So you'd say, well, as ugly as that sounds, JT, how is that possibly beneficial? Well, the answer for me is until we've experienced shame, we have no way of magnetizing the polar opposite of shame into our life. And for me, the polar opposite of shame is unconditional love and acceptance of self. those of us who beat ourselves up, we do that because we don't know how to experience unconditional acceptance of self. And for me, that's a journey we walk. We don't all of a sudden cross a magic line and say, well, I'm in love with myself and I feel it forever. I haven't crossed that line quite yet. So for me, it's a journey rather than a destination, and we need the shame in order to magnetize this compassionate acceptance of self, at least tastes of it into our lives. And I'll say, until we can do that, we'll absolutely never feel comfortable riding around inside of our own skin. It'll always feel to some degree like we're laying on a bed of broken glass in our skin. And we'll always be looking outside of ourselves to complete ourselves. So, I don't know if that's true for you, but for me that's very interesting to think about. And that would mean as we go through using the gift of intuition, scraping through the mud of our emotional constipation, is it possible that it'll become sometimes an ugly scene, not very delightful, and sometimes painful, as hell? Well, absolutely. I would also say if you've been constipated for years and years at a time, like many of us are, the day you unclog yourself, is it a dirty, stinky, filthy mess? Absolutely it is. However, that mess is necessary in order to cleanse ourselves. And actually, speaking of being in the poop and mud of our own emotional being and how it can actually be quite painful, there's an author that I absolutely enjoy on the concept, on the topic of emotional healing. His name's John Bradshaw. He's been around since doing this work before I was born. He's written a lot of great books that I've really enjoyed. And John Bradshaw says that grieving is the feeling of healing. And that would be pretty darn paradoxical for many of us who have been indoctrinated exclusively into the world of positive thinking, where, you know, if we feel, depressed or afraid, well, we would just positively think ourselves out of that. For me, that's not true healing. That's actually a form of denial. In fact, the denial can get so thick that we actually reach a point of being in denial about our denial. So for me, John Bradshaw says it best, that the pain of grieving is the evidence that we're actually healing. And if that's true, you would just consider, well, if what JP said earlier is true, that our most severe compromises we're actually numb to, that would actually mean as we're healing, we're actually stepping out of numbness, which means we're actually feeling what we've never given ourselves permission to feel before. that's why there's a saying, if you don't want to be a butcher, or saying that backwards, if you don't want blood on your apron, don't be a butcher. If you're in the world of authentic emotional healing, you will get blood on your apron. Will it feel overwhelming at times? For many people, the answer is yes. For others, it's not necessarily overwhelming. So if that doesn't just have you absolutely excited and motivated to stick your head in the mud and see what you have lurking down the surface, I don't know what will. And when it comes to embracing the darkness that we've all carried around with us most of our lives, there's a Swiss psychologist, a famous guy, Carl Jung, And Carl Jung says the path to enlightenment is not found by imagining light. He says the path to enlightenment is found by becoming conscious of our darkness. So if that's true, that would mean that our friend Carl Jung wasn't a fan of just going into denial and positively thinking ourselves out of being depressed or out of feeling angry or ashamed or whatever it might be. But he was actually a fan of giving ourselves an emotional enema to see what kind of crap we've got lodged in there. And of course, until we see what kind of crap we have lodged in there, we can't do anything about it. You can't get out of jail until you know you're in one. So as we skip along and get to, for me, the most important part of the call, what I'd like to do is just briefly entertain what actually healing means, what it means to actually heal. I've already stated first what healing doesn't mean. It doesn't mean being in denial. It doesn't mean wearing a facade when we're actually feeling like crap. It actually means, one, giving ourselves permission to feel like crap, or to feel the emotion that we've never given ourselves permission to feel before. Of course, as we put the emotion back into motion, we've got to feel it. And of course, as our friend John Bradshaw says, if you're feeling it, that's part of the evidence that you're actually healing it. I would also entertain the notion that, one, all wounding is self-inflicted. And that would, if that's true, that would make all healing self-healing. I don't believe there's any other person on earth that can heal you besides you. I believe there's coaches that can empower you to heal yourself and model the process, but I don't believe there's actually anybody who can heal you better than you can heal yourself. And you might say, well, JP, it sounds like kind of a harsh statement to say all wounding is self-inflicted. For me, it's a harsh statement, too. However, my experience does suggest that it's a true statement. Now, is it self-inflicted at a conscious level? Most of the time, not. At a subconscious reactive level is where we inflict the wounds. And, of course, I would say that it's never a situation or another person that gets us upset. It's always how we experience ourselves about the situation that creates the pain or the discomfort of it. And finally, I would just suggest that healing, if we're dealing with issues from your past, and there's plenty of issues from the present as well, but particularly with issues from the past, what I've learned is it's not about changing the events that happened and going back and undoing what was done in a relationship or whatever it was, but it's actually going back and discovering a new way to perceive and experience what happened. And what that actually gives rise to is a new way of feeling about what happened. So part of us might still be angry about a past relationship, whereas another part of us is actually moving into a place of healing where we can look back and begin to see the purpose in the relationship. We can actually begin to feel the remote sense of gratitude and peace about the relationship. Another part of us might be pretty chaotic still, or not. You know, it's said that we've got two eyes for a reason. We can always find a new way to perceive a situation. We can always find at least two ways to experience any given situation. And I would also say, Very important part of healing from my point of view is noticing when we're projecting out anger, blame, jealousy onto other people in other situations. What that means is noticing our story. The simple act of noticing the story and say, well, gosh, I see I'm blaming my girlfriend for why I feel upset. She left the dog inside and you needed to go out, so I got upset about that. So I get to notice how upset I am. So I get to own the emotion rather than having the upsetting situation own me. So taking a bird's eye view, and we actually observe our own stuff rather than becoming our stuff. And finally, before I invite somebody, if they'd like to process something they've got going on, I would say ultimately holistic emotional healing comes down to finding the frightened child within ourselves. And we figure out a way to give our heart authentically back to our child within. And we give our heart to the child in a way that we've never experienced from our mother, father, or anybody else, simply because it's impossible for somebody else to give us their heart in the same way that we can give ourselves our own heart. And I mentioned that, well, we're all children dressed up in these adult costumes. So there's a part of us that desperately wants to be rescued, a part of us that feels like it's in a cold, dark, scary closet where there's monsters inside. And we can actually discover the power to go back and save that part of us. And how that part of us, once it's saved, can magically transform how we experience our present-day life, how we can actually have a new experience of our relationships, our work, relationships with money for that matter. For me, it's pretty darn fascinating. So you guys have given me the opportunity to say way more words than I think should ever be strung together without somebody else's participation. And thank you for letting me do that. Of course, some of those words you'd say, well, that doesn't really fit in my value system. And some of those words you'd say, well, gosh, how I heard that, that's something to really consider. Either way is absolutely perfect. So, with that said, now's the time where if there's anybody online who's got something they're working on in their own life, they feel stuck in, or something about their life that they'd actually like to change, I'd like to invite you to give voice to it. You can speak up. By the way, I think James mentioned if you're muted, star 6 will unmute you. So is there anybody who would like to go for it?
Actually, any button on the phone pad will unmute them.
James, when everybody speaks at one time, it comes out as silence. I'll just say, some of us on the line, maybe we're tossing the idea around, well, do I want to, do I not want to? For me, it is it's a significant jump to give voice to something on a phone line with other people. So just know the courage to speak up, that's appreciated. The courage to stay silent, if that's appropriate for you, that's appreciated too. So last call for any volunteers.
Hi, JP, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You can't hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi, this is Sean, and I had the honor of attending your HLC1 course in Dallas last year, and I always considered myself lucky to receive your messages, and they resonate quite well with me, so I figure if nobody else wants to take the opportunity to use your wisdom, I surely will take the opportunity.
Well, you're the man for the job, my friend. And as always with you, Sean, I really appreciate how you project your own wisdom onto me and you recognize it in me. And I'll just say that, and thank you for letting me say that. Well, what is it about your life that you'd like to change or work on?
You know, I think with myself, and it seems like with a lot of clients and with a lot of people in general, I find myself in not executing behaviors that are conducive with goals that I feel are very clear to me and are integral to my success. Even if you take dieting, for instance, there are surely ways to where that my rational understanding of where my diet should be doesn't connect with my execution of diet or my and the same thing can go with my motivation for other areas in either whether it be my fitness plan or whether it be with my personal interactions with people. I'm interested in what your thoughts are on where that disconnect lies, or if it lies in a common place for most people, or if it's something that perhaps is would be located in a unique place for each individual, and therefore a unique place for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having the courage to present that to the table, Sean. And for me, it's actually giving voice to that. That's an issue I don't think is unique to you. I think it's an issue for everybody involved in the health field. And Sean, to make sure I've got your question, your question is that essentially, well, gosh, there's some behaviors not only with my business practice but also my nutritional practice that I know I could do that would enhance myself, but for whatever reason, I can't stick to them as consistently as what I'd otherwise like. Is that, did I capture the question, Sean?
I think so.
Okay. And then another question about your question is, are you essentially saying, well, gosh, there's a part of me that gets its emotional needs met by sabotaging me, and I wonder what the heck that's all about. Is that another way to say the same question, Sean?
Yeah. Well, I'm recognizing the sabotaging behaviors, and just for simplicity purposes, one area would be specifically if you looked at you know, my own diet, my dietary intake or my dietary practice, a place that I should have a reasonable amount of knowledge. And I'm curious as to why you think with me there would be a breakdown between what I believe would lead to my success and then why I am actually fail to follow that plan fully.
Mm.
Does that explain it? Or?
Yeah. What I heard you present, Sean, and what you presented to the rest of the listeners is you presented your story, and it's very courageous of you for wanting to find out what the story under your story is. And I'm just curious what kind of answers you'll come up with here. And let me ask you this, Sean. When you notice yourself in some way sabotaging, what happens inside of you? What goes on? And how does it feel is another part of that question.
You know, if we looked at the dietary example, you know, I think there's an amount of safety that is the initial feeling, and then if we looked at post, if you want to call it a bad meal or whatever, post that would be a feeling of recognizing that that is not leading me to the place that I actually want to go. So there's kind of a mixture that during the activity, it feels somewhat like it feels somewhat safe, and then post that, a rebound of, you know, oh shit, how do I correct this at this point?
Mm-hmm. And when you're on the rebound and you say, oh my gosh, how do I correct this, then what happens inside of you?
On good days, it'll be just a matter of kind of staying in the moment and being able to recognize the next opportunity for change. But it's still sometimes I feel like that approach on a bad day may cloak the issue and not actually help prevent it in the future. So too much forgiving and forgetting, if you will.
Gotcha. And do you ever find yourself metaphorically kicking your own butt for falling off the nutritional bandwagon?
You know, more often than not, I think I just I may actually go the other way too far and just give myself too much acceptance for it, possibly. With the reasoning of saying, well, you know, I'll just accept it as it is, and if I just say, you know, in the moment enough, you know, next time I'll behave better.
Mm. So, Sean, at this point, as I'm hearing your story, I'm hearing you say, well, gosh, part of me feels safe, you know, eating food, whatever type of food it is, and another part of me's got a different agenda. And, you know, it's very conflicting, and I don't understand that. So let me ask you this, Sean. With your permission, I'll toss out an age to you. And the age that comes up is 15. So when you were roughly a freshman in high school, do you recall being 15 years old, being a freshman in high school?
Sure.
Okay. And my question to you, Sean, during your freshman year, when did you feel safest and most secure?
That's a interesting time to pinpoint. I can't necessarily point to the safest time, but perhaps if I look at the inverse of that, the non-safest time, that was actually right about the time that my father's second marriage, the woman that I had basically grown up with as a mother, that's the time that their marriage in essence fell apart. So there was definitely a time during that was a very unsafe time. So I would say during that time period, it would be just pre, if I were to say the state of this time, it would be just pre the going through the divorce and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I got that. And during the divorce, what did you do in order to feel comforted?
You know, it's tough to say. It's tough to say. I don't know that I could come up with a clean answer for that.
Could I present a possibility?
Sure.
What kind of grades did you get when you were a freshman?
Pretty reasonable. You said grades. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah.
Pretty reasonable. They actually got better post freshman year. So, I don't know if that tells you anything or not.
I don't know if it does or not either, but what I'd like to present is it possible that at least parts of you learn to lose themselves in your schoolwork to deflect about the pain of the breakup of your father's marriage?
I surely think that could be a possibility.
Okay.
I think, yeah, you know, due to the lack of, perhaps the lack of stability there, I translated or attempted to seek that stability in schoolwork, and I was what I would probably consider a fairly fairly good student at that point. So I can surely see that connection.
Yeah, I would believe that too. And here's another weird question for you, Sean. When you were 15, what did you do that your father did not approve of?
You know, I can't come up with a good answer for that. He was fairly from what I could feel, non-judgmental. So, I don't know if I can come up with a good answer for you.
Yeah. Well, would it surprise you if I absolutely believe you? When you were 15, getting good grades, pretty much falling in line with how your father wanted you to behave, do you think it made his life easier with you being 15 years old and essentially, falling in line with how he wanted you to live life, staying out of trouble?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Well, Sean, what I'm curious about is, here you are, you're some years past 15, and if what we're saying is halfway true, that would imply that you've got a 15-year-old inside who's dealing with undealt with emotions. And part of them learn, well, Dad's going through some painful times, so what I'm going to do is be a good boy. I'll get good grades. I'll not get into trouble because that'll make Dad's life easier. And then another part of you says, well, that's a bunch of crap. So I want to just start to become a defiant from that. And if that's halfway true, Sean, then perhaps the defiant part of you that was never expressed when you were 15 is acted out when you're, eating more cookies than you think you otherwise should. As abstract as I listen to this whole scenario, it sounds pretty darn abstract to me, however, feels somehow grounded. As abstract as that sounds, Sean, how does that resonate with you?
I think that's fairly close. I think that's fairly close.
That's cool. And I heard your words. I think that's fairly close. Now, what I'm going to ask you to do is get less in touch with your head and more in touch with your heart, and ask you, how do you feel hearing those possibilities?
I feel okay with those possibilities.
Okay, that works. So if that's true, what that would mean is you and I have the task of performing a miracle with your 15-year-old in about 2 minutes. Would that be okay with you?
That would be fine with me.
Okay, well, we'll just try it out and see where it goes. First, let me ask you this, just to get a little more traction under our feet so we can hike up this path. What did it mean to your 15-year-old to see his father go through the pain of a broken-up marriage?
It was rough for the 15-year-old, I would say.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of uncomfortable emotion, and it was not the easiest thing in the world.
No, I believe that. And Sean, in this moment, what I'd invite you to do so we can potentiate the resolve process of this, I'd ask you to close your eyes and just imagine your 15-year-old self sitting in front of you. However you looked and however it comes out in your imagination, that's absolutely fine. And Sean, I'd like to invite you, as weird as it may feel, I'd invite you to speak these words, just repeating after me out loud to your 15-year-old self, and say, in speaking to you, 15-year-old Sean, and go ahead.
I'm sorry, repeat, maybe.
Go ahead and you can repeat that out loud, Sean.
And what was the first thing? Sorry, I didn't understand.
Oh, yeah. So, in speaking to you, 15-year-old Sean.
In speaking to you, 15-year-old Sean.
I'm the voice of your future.
I'm the voice of your future.
It's very important for me to notice.
It's very important for you to notice.
It actually is very important for me to notice.
Okay, it's very important for me to notice.
How scary it is for you right now.
How scary it is for you right now.
Seeing your dad in pain.
Seeing your dad in pain.
And seeing your stepmom taking a step away.
Seeing your stepmom taking your step away.
Taking a step away from the family.
By seeing your stepmom take a step away.
Yeah. Say, 15-year-old Sean, let's see what else actually comes in. Let's say this, 15-year-old Sean, with your permission,
15-year-old Sean, with your permission,
I'd like to invite you to speak to me.
I'd like to invite you to speak to me.
And tell me things you've never told anybody else.
Tell me things you've never told anybody else.
Is that okay with you, 15-year-old Sean?
Is that okay with you, 15-year-old Sean?
And what would 15-year-old Sean say? Is he okay with that?
I would say that he's probably a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah. I would imagine he would be. So try this. See if we can. And by the way, Sean, you experiencing and being able to report where he feels nervous about that, that's very real and very sensitive of you to notice that that's there. Let me ask you to do this, Sean. Speak to your 15-year-old self how you imagine he must feel.
I'm sorry, we were getting a little distracted. Speak to him about how you must feel.
Yeah, you get to let him know how you would imagine that he feels in this situation. And you can start it off by saying, 15-year-old Sean, is it possible that you feel this? And then you just let it fly.
15-year-old Sean, is it possible that you feel insecure about what's going on, embarrassed about it, abandoned by it, the possibility that you're afraid? So those would be the questions that I'm looking for.
And in his heart of hearts, what would 15-year-old Sean say back to that question?
I think you would probably agree with that.
Okay. Say this, 15-year-old Sean.
15-year-old.
Thank you for your vulnerability.
Thank you for your vulnerability.
What you need to know.
What you need to know.
It's absolutely okay.
It's absolutely okay.
And normal.
Normal.
To feel these things.
To feel these things.
And say, because of your sensitivity that you're now discovering.
Because of your sensitivity that you're now discovering.
That's why I love you.
That's why I love you.
The more sensitive you become.
The more sensitive you become.
The more sensitive I become.
The more sensitive I become.
And I realize how lonely you felt.
I realize how lonely you felt.
But from today onward.
But from today onward.
I promise I will always be with you.
I promise I will always be with you.
I know I wasn't there for you when you were 15.
No, I wasn't there for you when you were 15.
I guarantee I will always be with you starting now.
I guarantee I will always be with you starting now.
And when you're with me.
And when you're with me.
Just know how much I appreciate.
Just know how much I appreciate.
When you feel with your heart.
When you feel with your heart.
Then ask him, 15-year-old Sean, is this okay with you?
15-year-old Sean, is this okay with you?
What's he say?
Sure.
I'm sorry?
Say it again, JP.
I'm sorry, I missed it. What does 15-year-old Sean say back to you?
Oh, it says sure, yeah.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Yeah, that works. So, given this process, Sean, what I've witnessed you do is reclaim a part of you, and if we're halfway on target, what that means is the 15-year-old part who's got a lot of unexpressed pain, he shows up in your life in ways where business gets sabotaged, nutritional protocols get sabotaged, which would mean that you're getting to the story under the story. Now, what's important for me, Sean, is to say that what just happened is words, and what really counts is what came from your heart, not so much the words. And in the days to come, Sean, I'd be very curious. I know you've got my email. Send me a follow-up, and, you know, good, bad, indifferent, or sideways, I'd be very curious to hear how this issue has changed for the better, worse, or the same, because that's your experience is the true measure of whether the healing was enough or not. Would that be okay with you, Sean?
Yeah, that'd be great.
And Sean, for myself and the rest of us on the line, I would just say thank you for your willingness to model the process. Absolutely appreciated. So thank you for that.
I'm happy to have the opportunity, and thank you to you.
You're very welcome. And for the rest of us on the line, thank you for allowing us to run a little over. I know we're a little bit over the 1 hour mark. I appreciate you allowing this phone call to flow where it wanted to flow. So with that, I'd like to close by saying I appreciate your presence on the phone. I would also say if any part of the mentoring services I offer may be appropriate for you, you can check out the TPS success.com website. I've got some information up there. I've also got some upcoming classes on, as James said, the essentials of holistic emotional healing. I've got those details on my website, which is holistichealthandfitness.com. And it has been an honor to be a part of this. I appreciate you letting me be the one on the phone. Speak words for all of us to hear. It's much appreciated. So, James, are there any closing comments on your end before we slam the gavel down and call it an evening?
Well, sure. First, thank you, JP, once again for talking with us tonight. That was just fascinating and enlightening as always, and I really appreciate your being here with us.
Oh. Well, thank you, JP.
Yep. And I will remind everybody that's with us that we will be posting the recording of this call on in our mentoring teleclass section of our website. So if you would like to revisit all the wonderful things that took place, we certainly invite you to do so. And also, if you think that there's somebody who might wasn't with us tonight but might enjoy listening and benefit from listening to it, you can direct them there as well. As JP said, he has a presence on our website, and I want to encourage anyone that feels as though they could benefit from JP's coaching to have a look at his mentor profile at ppssuccess.com, and you can find his profile in the mentoring services section once you're there. And finally, I'll remind everybody that we have another PPS mentor teleclass taking place this Thursday. That's February 26th at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I'll be joined by Vidya McNeil, our PPS business coach, who will be talking about business basics, policy and procedure, and why they're good for your business. And that could be, in particular, a wonderful call given our sort of economic crisis right now. This will be a really informative call, so I encourage and invite everybody to join us. And that's it. I want to thank everybody, and thank you, JP, for joining us, and I look forward to speaking to everybody on our next call.
Oh, you're welcome, and I wish everybody a very peaceful evening tonight.
Thanks, JP.
You're welcome, James. Good night.
Good night, everybody.